Welcome to Bent on Education Podcast, a podcast focusing on evidence-based review of physiology, pharmacology, pathophysiology, and other anesthesia-related topics. I'll discuss being a clinical preceptor, a mentor, and a leader. This podcast is by CRNA for SRNAs and others seeking to build their basic knowledge base. So let's get bent on education. Welcome back to another episode of Bent on Education. So today we're going to talk about the drug ketamine. Ketamine has so many effects on the central nervous system, and it's well recognized that how it works is that it inhibits the N-methyl-D-aspartate channels, those NMDA receptor sites, as well as the HCN1 receptor sites. Those are the neuronal hyperpolarization activation cationic channels. I didn't know about those before reviewing and looking, you know, into how ketamine worked. So remember NMDA and the HCN1 channels as well. How it produces either anesthesia or analgesia is still controversial. I find that with a lot of the medication that we use, specifically in anesthesia, and like I said, we talk about these meds from an anesthetic standpoint, but you can use ketamine as a sedative agent as well and an analgesic agent. So super important for people who are in the healthcare field, thinking about going in the healthcare field and they want to know a little bit more. People who are in nursing school, get to know these medications like the back of your hand. So what is its prescribed mechanism of action? Ketamine disassociates the sensory impulses from the limbic cortex. Remember, the limbic cortex is that part of your brain that is involved with the awareness of sensation. So when we're looking at a patient who has been given a dose of ketamine, they're in that state of disassociation. And what happens is the patient may appear conscious, right? So they may have some eye opening, they may be swallowing, moving their arms, things like that, but they're unable to process or respond to that sensory input. This just takes me to some of the evidence and research that has been done on ketamine as far as it being an analgesic agent. And I always tell our students that when you're looking at research, look at what the researcher is trying to see, trying to, you know, show the world as far as what their research is. And sometimes you need to question research too. So what am I getting at here? So ketamine working as an analgesic agent, is it more so that the person or the patient isn't responding to the painful stimulus or the pain? Or is it that it's actually an analgesic? So these are questions that you may want to always ask yourself when we're talking about any kind of research or looking into chemical properties and how medication actually works. There has been research as well done on how ketamine affects an individual's mood. So when we think about that, this agent is being used to treat, you know, severe forms of depression that has been resistant to other medication, particularly when the patient has suicidal ideation. So when, you know, you're looking at treatment, this is a good option for someone who is in a pretty severe depressive state. Ketamine also supplements our general anesthesia. What I mean by that is if we have cases where maybe we can't use anesthetic gases, ketamine is a great adjunct for those cases, or even some procedures that you may do outside of the operating room. Low doses of ketamine has been used for analgesia in post-operative patients. So it's one of those agents that, you know, widely used. You can use it for a bunch of different things. So don't ever take it off the shelf as far as utilization for multiple reasons. Looking at ketamine structurally, it is in the phencyclidine class. So that is PCP, angel dust, and reasonably thinking about it, ketamine is about 1/10 as potent as PCP is. However, even with that 1/10 potency of PCP, it does still maintain some of the psychomimetic effects that PCP has. Ketamine is great when you have a patient that is hypovolemic, for example. And in pediatrics, I'm a pediatric anesthetist, as most of you know already, but a lot of our patients don't have IV catheters in and they lack IV access when we first, have them in the preoperative area. So ketamine is a great useful drug for intramuscular induction of general anesthesia, or if you have a patient that's relatively uncooperative, this is a great medication to give them via the IM route. You can combine it with multiple other agents, propofol, midazolam, and things like that for conscious sedation during procedures, or if you're going to do a peripheral nerve block or an endoscopic procedure on a patient, ketamine's a great drug to use. It's not common, or I should say it is common, but even at what is considered sub-anesthetic doses of the medication can still cause hallucinations. But think about the fact that if you are giving ketamine to a patient, you want to make sure that to combat those side effects of hallucination, seeing things crawling on the ceilings and so on and so forth, that you would give a drug in the benzodiazepine class, such as midazolam or Versed. This will cause that, remember, retrograde or antegrade amnesia, so the patient doesn't remember seeing or feeling that way. The interesting thing about ketamine, and this is just a story, you know, to keep in mind why some medications kind of stick with you more than others do. When I was in anesthesia school, so that was between 2001 and 2004, we have to take an exam in anesthesia school called the C exam or the self-evaluation exam. When I was preparing for the C exam, you know, you go through all these questions and go through your medication and all of these things that you're required to know for anesthesia school to be a safe provider of anesthesia. So I go in to take my C exam, and the first 20 questions of the C exam, I honestly had no idea what they were even asking me. So I had a pretty little pattern for the first 20 questions. And then when I got to question 21, it asked me about the chemical class of ketamine, and I knew it was fenciclidine. So this medication sticks with me 100%. Like, I could probably talk about it like the back of my hand because it was one of those that I hold near and dear to my heart. It helped me through my C exam. Let's talk about the pharmacokinetics of ketamine, the absorption, distribution, biotransformation, and then how subsequently it's excreted from the body. There are multiple routes of administration for this medication. So orally, nasally, rectally, subcutaneously, you can give it epidurally if you needed to. Obviously, IV, intramuscular, just about any route that you needed to give it. Typically, you're going to give it IV or IM, so in the muscle. The peak plasma levels are typically achieved within roughly 10 to 15 minutes after an intramuscular injection. You can imagine that if you're giving this medication IV, that's much quicker because there's 100% availability of the medication. Ketamine is highly lipid soluble. And so when we're looking at these ketamine-induced increases in cerebral blood flow, for example, in cardiac output, the results are a rapid brain uptake and subsequent redistribution of the medication. How does a patient awaken from ketamine? It's because of that redistribution from the brain, so that central compartment, into the peripheral compartments. Ketamine is metabolized in the liver to several metabolites. One of the metabolites, norketamine, still maintains some of that anesthetic activity. So if you have a patient and you're giving multiple doses of ketamine, Remember that they can potentially develop a tolerance for this medication. And so you just want to be very careful. Extensive hepatic uptake of ketamine is explained in its relatively short elimination half-life. And the elimination half-life of this medication is about 90 minutes to 2 hours. How do we get rid of it? How does the medication completely leave the body? Through the kidneys and the renal system. When we look at how ketamine affects some of our organ systems, let's start with the heart. So most of the other anesthetics that you will look at, most of your other sedative medication you will look at, are going to decrease your blood pressure, it's going to decrease your heart rate and cardiac output and all of those things. Conversely, ketamine actually increases the arterial blood pressure, increases the heart rate, and the cardiac output as well, specifically if you're giving them in very rapid bolus injections. So these indirect cardiovascular effects are because of that central stimulation with the sympathetic nervous system. The other aspect, which is not frequently spoken about when you talk about ketamine, is that it does inhibit the reuptake of norepinephrine after it releases norepi at the nerve terminals. Why is this super important? That is why your blood pressure will stay elevated, because it's inhibiting the reuptake, so ketamine is not being reuptaken into the system or back into the terminals, and so it's floating around with the ability to increase somebody's systemic or arterial blood pressure. Even though there's preservation of, you know, your blood pressure, heart rate, all those things with ketamine, you do want to be very careful, specifically if you're giving it to a patient who has coronary artery disease or congestive heart failure, of course, uncontrolled hypertension, because you have that circulating norepinephrine. The direct myocardial depressant effects happen as well, and that's when you give large doses of ketamine. So if you give incremental doses, you're not going to see this direct myocardial depressant effect, but if you give a large dose of ketamine, you can potentially see that. Why does this happen, right? Because that's the thing, is that as somebody who's learning about medication, you always want to dig down to, well, okay, I know that this happens, but why does it happen? Most of that direct myocardial depressant effect probably is due to an inhibition of calcium transients, and they are unmasked by that sympathetic blockade, so at the level of the spinal cord, or just an exhaustion of your catecholamine stores. So once your catecholamine stores are exhausted, there's nothing to be released into circulation. Therefore, you have those direct myocardial depressant effects of ketamine. What we look at when we are sedating a patient is, how does the medication that we're giving affect the respiratory system? As far as the ventilatory drive, it's minimally affected when we give doses of ketamine. Although you do need to be careful, because if you're giving ketamine, again, with multiple agents, opioids, for example, propofol, another example, you can depress somebody's respiratory or ventilatory drive. Upper airway reflexes remain largely intact when we give ketamine. Partial airway obstruction can occur, and you do want to be cognizant that the patient can have an increased risk for aspiration. Remember that ketamine does produce all of those sludge effects, right? So salivation, lacrimation, urination, defecation, and so on and so forth. So the patient has a little bit more saliva than they normally would. The increase in this salivation associated with ketamine can be attenuated if you give a dose of an anticholinergic agent such as glycopyrrolate. Atropine is a anticholinergic agent as well, but you want to kind of stay away from that if you're giving it for anti-sialagog purposes, just because you are going to increase a patient's heart rate a little bit more, maybe even their blood pressure and so on. So kind of stick with glycopyrrolate. It's a little bit more friendly, a little bit more gentle as far as anti-sialagogs and anticholinergic medication is concerned. We already talked a little bit about how ketamine affects the nervous system, but everyone knows, I should stay away from saying phrases like that, but ketamine increases, one, your cerebral oxygen consumption. It does increase your cerebral blood flow, and it can increase your intracranial pressure. So if you take all of those things into consideration, you might think, this may not be a very good medication to give if I'm taking care of a patient that has a space-occupying lesion, somebody who has a head trauma, because if I give ketamine, am I going to make those things worse? However, if you look at evidence, recent evidence and publications about combining ketamine with a benzodiazepine or another agent that acts on the GABA receptor system, and you control the patient's ventilation, ketamine has been shown not to increase intracranial pressure. That's lovely for people who work in neuro units and they were like, kind of could use this, but maybe I shouldn't. Go ahead and use it. Make sure that you're using another medication such as a benzodiazepine that works on that same GABA receptor site. Other aspects of ketamine, there again are those undesirable psychotomimetic side effects, dreams, delirium, and so on and so forth that happen during emergence and recovery. They happen more so with adult patients, and they are less common with the pediatric patient. Even with the adult patient, how do you combat those? Again, a dose of benzodiazepines goes a very long way. What are some of the interactions that ketamine has with other medication that you may use to sedate patients, or if you're doing a general anesthetic for a patient? They do act synergistically with our anesthetic gases that we use, but they obviously, or should be obvious, that they act in an additive way with propofol, benzodiazepines, any of our other GABA receptor agents, GABA receptor mediated agents. Remember, we talked about how ketamine disassociates the limbic system. So when you give a dose of ketamine, a patient's EEG or their electroencephalogram shows a depression of the thalamocortical pathway and activation of the limbic system, right? Well, despite this increased epileptiform activity, there's no clinical evidence of seizure activity or spread of the epileptiform activity to cortical areas of the brain. So all of that means is that ketamine is less likely to cause seizures and may in fact have some central nervous system protective properties. Ketamine as an analgesic. Remember, I touched on that a little bit, that ketamine in lower doses can be used for pain management or pain control, both for chronic pain and acute pain as well. Ketamine has been shown to lower a patient's pain scores, specifically in the post-operative areas. And the analgesic effects are achieved at what is considered sub-anesthetic blood concentration. So when the concentration of ketamine is below what you would utilize for an anesthetic dose. Other things to keep in mind is that ketamine is useful for patients that do require higher doses of opiates and opioids, such as patients who are on chronic therapy or patients with a history of opioid use. But like a lot of the medication that you will see, and when they are used for specific purposes, sometimes we just don't know why they work for that reason. And ketamine is no different. But what has been shown is that the NMDA receptor has been found to be associated with central sensitization and wind up at the spinal cord level when chronic pain is facilitated. We'll talk about what wind up means when we'll discuss a little bit. That's another episode I can do, something about chronic pain and pain management. So we'll talk about that then. Studies have also suggested that ketamine analgesia occurs, like I said, by prevention of hyperalgesia and decreases in the central nervous system sensitization that can occur with acute pain. You already know that pain is a topic in and of itself, so we'll discuss that. I think that's going to be after we complete, you know, our kind of top of the drawer or our series on medication, we'll talk about some of these other concepts, pain being one of them. So that's the brief on ketamine, uses of ketamine, and things like that. So on the next episode, which will occur in 2 weeks, so I've thought about every week, but I think doing every other week actually gives you time to digest the information so that you're ready for the next episode. What are we going to do on the next episode? Next episode will be Etomidate. That's an oldie, but a goodie as well. And until then, get bent on education.